In the heart of the Mediterranean Sea lies an ancient archipelago steeped in enigma and wonder. Known for its picturesque beauty, this small island nation hides a tapestry of perplexing riddles waiting to be unraveled by the curious and the intrepid. Archaeological puzzles abound both above ground and below. Deep grooves crisscross the landscape that are subject to constant debate as to their purpose and origins. Including some of the oldest freestanding structures in the world, temples and ancient structures dot the hills. Constructed using massive slabs of limestone, some weighing over 50 tons, these buildings have been dated to be older than the Great Pyramids of Egypt or Stonehenge. Buried beneath the ground is a massive series of passageways and chambers, carved directly into the bedrock, that are covered in strange spiral designs that can be found all over the island. Many of these chambers seem to interact with each other and produce strange acoustic effects that can amplify and focus sounds. This case file joined the theorists as they meander through mammoth mystical monuments in Malta's Megalithic Mysteries.
Welcome to Alien Theorist Theorizing, Case File 279. Malta's Mythological Megalithic Mysteries.
We practiced this at least four times before we got on here.
The Malta's, Malta's Magical Megalithic Mysteries.
That's close. That's pretty good.
We're talking about the Isle of Malta. I'm Braden.
I'm Sal.
I'm Dan.
You know what's funny last week is when I was playing it back, like, because I fucking destroyed the live game. Well, one, we didn't mention Andrew, and it might be the first case file where we just didn't, no one introduced themselves.
No, we've done that a lot.
Everybody knows who we are at this point.
We've done that many times.
Have we?
Have we?
Yeah, usually just forget. Definitely on Power Hours, definitely on other stuff.
I mean, Power Hours. But it's like, you're not listening to it. If you're a new listener, you're not listening to a Power Hour. Like,
maybe you're a new listener, you only listen to Power Hours.
That's a strange breed.
They're out there.
I'm sure they're out there. It's just like, okay, all right. That's weird.
I love Power Hours.
We love Power Hours, but it's like, I would assume that people come to listen for subject matter over just random dudes chatting out.
Random dudes with subject matter.
Yeah.
Random subject matter. No direction needed.
But this isn't a random.
This isn't random.
That should have been what we called those instead of Power Hours. No direction needed.
That's a great podcast.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Bet you it's already a podcast. If not, copyright, that's ours.
Yeah, it's a good band name too. That's a pretty good band name.
We're in May 2023. Copyright.
Yeah. That's how it works. That's ours. You just say it on a podcast and boom, that's copyright.
I'm just going to submit that podcast feed. I'm fine.
Done.
Yeah, we're heading over to Malta.
Malta.
Tiny isles in the middle of the Mediterranean.
This is where malt balls come from, right? Correct? This is where...
Chocolate malt balls? Chocolate malt balls. Like, I don't know.
That makes sense. Cool. I had to look it up, so I got a little screen here.
Chocolate malt balls?
What's the opposite of enhance?
Dehance.
Dehance. There's Malta. Dehance.
Dance.
Dehance. I'm just zooming out.
Dance.
Dehance. Yeah.
Dance.
Off the southern tip of Sicily, you have Malta.
Yes.
It's like an island the size. It's pretty much the islands themselves are like the size of a... Like a city, like a big city. Like they're not big.
Pretty small.
The whole island.
Yeah, you can. Yeah,
Look at this technology Braden's pulling in here. What is this you're using?
Oh my God.
Wow, I've never seen that before.
It's techno sorcery.
Yeah, there we go. Mediterranean, right in the middle. Yeah. It's got like, you know, as we're going to get into portions of it, is like, you know, we're going to get into the megalithic structures with, as you look at this, just remember when we're talking about these things, where this is fucking located. Because like, when I was learning about the megalithic structures and stuff, I was like, oh yeah, that's cool. Then I like, kind of like, I was like, where is it? And I looked and I was like, okay, wait, what? In the middle there? What the fuck? I was like, that's so weird. It's not a big island.
No, it is not.
Look at it.
In terms of like square kilometers.
Look how fast I can move my cursor from end to end.
I mean, yes.
Right?
Blink, I mean, you could measure it. Google Maps says let's do that if you wanted to measure it. But yeah, it is a very tiny island, but it is packed with lots of cool little structures and things. And there's tons of archaeological mysteries that are just sitting there for people to ponder upon and have been puzzling for archaeologists since like pretty much the early 1900s, if not before. One of these... There's a lot of stories and there's a lot of legends and there's a lot of stuff that surround the megalithic structures on Malta, because there's plenty of them. There's not just like a couple temples or whatever. There's a number of like different geological.
I think there's like 19 sites of note, like 19 like megalithic mm-hmm. sites. So,
it's got a whole like everything on there is like the whole fucking island is like a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Feels like, yeah. Like the whole place. Like,
after seeing this, I'm like, fuck, this is on the bucket list of somewhere I would love to go.
Yeah, you got your classic megaliths, man. Some of them like 40, 50 tons, giant slabs of stone, stacked doorways. Like, it's fucking right?
On this
awesome.
Tiny island in the middle of the Mediterranean. I think one of the craziest thing is this predates so many megalithic structures. Pyramids, Stonehenge, all those.
This was like considered to be like the old, one of the oldest ones until they found Göbekli Tepe.
Göbekli Tepe. Then, yeah, this was the one that rewrote everything. They're like, we got to rewrite everything.
And then Göbekli Tepe.
Throw the history books away.
Göbekli Tepe is double as old.
Yeah, and then they're like, Malta who?
Man, it's super dope.
One of the most prominent structures that they have there that they find most fascinating is these temples called the... I had to look up how to say this because it's like the way that they spell it is... I don't speak... Is it Maltese? Is that what they speak?
At first glance, I thought it was Malta. Ganja Temple. Right away, boom. That's what I
said. Ganja Temple. That's an easy one. You know, any word in like that's it written in English... Using the English lexicon that hits you with the double G to start a word, you're like,
ooh.
Ooh.
Yeah,
I was not taught how this works.
Gigantija or something. I was trying to say it all real funky, and then I looked it up, and then
Gigantia
temples, which are these ancient megalithic temple complexes that are located there. On the island of like Gozo, Malta, which is like the other, like it's kind of like two islands, right?
It's kind of like a small island chain. And that there's like, two main islands and a couple little specks like surrounding it. But
two main and then there's two little ones.
So
or three little ones.
Kind of the basic outline of these things is like from what we know about these temples is that they were supposedly built between 3600 and 3200 BCE. So that makes them over 5,000 years old.
At least 5,000.
At least 5,000 years old. And they are among the earliest freestanding stone structures in the world. They predate, like Braden said before, they predate Stonehenge and the Great Pyramids of Egypt. So they are among the earliest freestanding. Not that they are like the top, but they are among the earliest freestanding stone structures. When you look at these temples, they're very like the construction of them is like it is mind-boggling that the way that they are built. It's kind of like they're like almost structures within structures. Way that they're put together.
And I just use this tool. So like the big island is 26 kilometers from tip to tip, or 16.77 miles. And if you're just, let's just include both of them together, even though there's quite a bit of water, a little bit between the two main islands, we're talking like tip to tip, 43 kilometers, 27 miles, and you have this many structures, ancient structures, on these fucking little islands.
most of the temples include these like these very massive limestone blocks in their construction, and some of these weigh over 50 tons, and they were moved there, quarried, and then they ended up moved there. And then they have the walls, which are made of these thick and solid, along with like the ceilings, which are made of like corbelled stone slabs. So like another type of stone that they got put together. Now, archaeologists are still not sure what the exact purpose of the Gigantea temples are. They're not fully understood about what their function was or what their purpose served, you know, with the culture that was living there at the time and that constructed these, originally constructed these temples. But, you know, it's everything, you know, theories kind of range from everything from whether they were had religious or ritualistic significance, or, you know, perhaps they were used for communal gatherings, you know, ceremonies, anything, even places of burial, even though it's like right here, like, I don't think any like human remains,
they did say they found like animal remains, and that might mean either like ritual sacrifice or just having a good old feast. Like just a big old cookout in the middle of these temples. And they'll have that open top too, right? At least right now. Like like a full stone enclosure with a perfectly open top. So if that was a roof, it would have had to have been some type of like, so I guess it's hard to imagine if it had a roof because it would have had to been wood, I guess.
Humongous.
Huge, like a huge.
Wood rafters.
But it's round, like, so it'd have to have like a rounded top, like a... I couldn't have like a standard shed roof on top of that.
Yeah, I guess you'd have. Yeah, I mean, you could have wood. I guess if you had wooden like supports, I guess, kind of sticking out, like maybe something like that when you look at them. Now, there are a number of like historically important artifacts that have been found near this site and at the site itself. That you have these statues of, they refer to them as obese. obese figures, which they often refer to as just fat ladies, which they
heavy
find
set statues, around. You know,
heavy yeah, set statues. You know, maybe that back then, like you know, it, that right. was the you know
that was a symbol was just of how wealth. Looked. You know,
mm-hmm.
had that weight on you.
Yeah, there's a singular wealth and health. You know, it's like that you were healthy.
And heart disease.
Well, you were eating well back then. If you were eating well back then, you could pack on some fat, man. Like you were living high. Like that's pretty much it. But it's usually thought that a lot of these artifacts, which are found here at this site and then a number of other sites on the islands, like within Malta, a lot of these other places, like connecting them to perhaps that these are all connected to some type of either religion or cult that worshiped, like this was their idea of, you know, their embodiment of the goddess of fertility. You know, you have these very, which we've seen in other cultures too. You see in other cultures, you know, the very large, the heavy set figures, you know.
Or the fucking prominent giant cock statues you go to, you know, in Asia or anything.
Okay, yeah.
Same thing, different sex.
Part of that religion too, Dan, is what I read is that's one of the reasons why they've dated this temple complex to where it is because there are similar figurines and sculptures found in all the small, like, I guess, residential ruins, which are very small, mm-hmm. not megalithic at all. So like, well, right. I guess these people who lived here at these settlements were also here. Therefore, they built this temple because their stuff's all over it.
Yeah. It's a perfectly logical conclusion to come to when you have that kind of stuff. But yeah, that they were
worshiping
the kind of thing.
Were the temples already on Malta?
Yeah, were they already here? Did they build them? And we're not really sure.
Well, because you think, I was going to stay on this point for a quick sec because we talked about how small that island is and the size mm-hmm. of some of these complexes we're going to get to more after. And the weight of some of these, of the big stones, like 40 tons, we're talking like the size of a small house in a stone.
Yeah.
And they're building these in the middle of the ocean, supposedly. They would have had to, if you go with the timeline, there's no land bridge at this time. So you would have to sail there.
Let me just tell you, like boats weren't that great 5,000 years ago.
Yeah, probably not. I mean, we don't really know much about them.
They weren't spectacular. I was looking at some like boat history, and I was not impressed.
Bundled wood,
right?
Wrapped tree.
The first the first boat was like a canoe, and it's 8,000 years ago. And I was like, it's basically like a hay canoe. Just tightly bound, like, looks like hay.
I mean, yeah, they weren't, they definitely probably wouldn't have been like reeds, importing, I guess. Importing any of their heavier building materials on those boats, I'm sure. But yeah, it's like, yeah, the fact that we do have an established culture here that can be connected to these structures, that it's like, did they build these, or were they already here? One of the people who contests the official dating, or what is considered the official dating of these things, is Graham Hancock.
The legend himself.
The legend, the man, the myth, the legend, Graham Hancock, who...
always makes a hell of a point. Always makes a hell of a point.
The Croatian waters on yachts with... with saves the day, yeah. With man who saves the day,
talking ancient cultures and ruins
over
and
breakfast.
They probably talked about the Gigantia temples sometimes, because they do also feature prominently in his the Ancient Apocalypse.
Apocalypse on Netflix is awesome. Mm-hmm. Highly recommend.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think you watched it.
I watched it and when it first came out, and then I refreshed my memory just before we recorded this one. He's pretty much saying that we're making the points he's making. He's that this is a small island nation. They would have had to just sail over probably from Sicily or some other, they think Sicily, sail over, bring animals, domesticate it, farm, and then seemingly out of nowhere, they just build these gigantic megalithic structures. Out of nowhere.
And that doesn't, to me, like right there when you say it like this, this doesn't make sense, because if you were to look, let me pull up my map again here. If you were to look at this and say you're like, obviously you didn't start on Malta, you came to Malta, right? There would be evidence, like you would think there would be like evidence of these things being built somewhere else. Prior to be like, it doesn't seem like a good area to be like, you know what we should do here? Build some structures we've never built before in the middle of nowhere.
Really big.
Really big. Let's get crazy. We're going to have to bring more people now. It's like you had people wherever you came from. Like if it was Sicily, Italy, you know, some of the other regions there, it would make more sense in my little monkey brain if you had like some more of these kind of ancient structures on the edge of the Mediterranean. And then you're like, oh, and they're on Malta. You're like, to me, I would be like, okay, that makes sense. It's very strange to me that this is the first instance of these things in the area. It's just like, boom, on this island and everywhere on this island, nowhere else.
A small island. So most, like if there's a sizable population, most of that island's going to be farm and livestock land. Like, because there's nothing, there's no, like, you're not really trading it. You're that far away, that long ago. You're like self-sufficient on this island.
Well, so, and the other thing is it's not like of what we know of the area. This predates like, you know, all these things. It's not like this was like a
hustle bustling. Pyramids, pre-built, predates the Great Pyramid. Most pyramids in Egypt.
It's not like this is like of what we know of history, this would be a time where this is like this epic trade hub of like, you know, because this would be so advanced for that time that there would be no one else. You would be light years ahead of everyone else. So it's like if this was like a Mediterranean hub of like, hey, come on to the Isle of Malta and check out this. Like it was like the Vegas of the ancient world. You know what I mean? Like there's nothing else to support that. That like hypothesis of like, oh, this was a place where everyone came and visited. Cause there's not these kind of civilizations anywhere else at this time that we know of right now.
Yeah. And I think another one of the points that Graham Hancock makes is that, we go back to the pyramids. If you go back to the pyramids, you can see at least with the pyramids that there's a definite kind of learning curve.
Progression.
There's
some shitty pyramids.
Right next to the big pyramids or little pyramids that are like, those aren't exactly the great ones. And then, you know, even farther out in the desert, we find plenty that are like, these were the seemingly could be prototypes, considered prototypes for the big ones. Right. But here on Malta, it's just these structures. It's like, they just built them that there's no like we built this one first and then this one and then like there's no like
they seem to just all pop up together just like
yeah boop. They're just like this is the way we're gonna build it. Some of the structures can be like, okay, well, they built like a part inside first and then they built like another part outside, kind of like encasing building structure on structure. But still, it's still kind of, it's still impressive that these structures kind of just held together as long as they did and were built so early, especially with considering just the size and the weight of the stones that they were being moved around at that time when you basically all that you had was like cart and wheel, maybe.
Probably not. Yeah. There's no wheel in Egypt, wasn't there? Not? Didn't they not build those without fucking wheel? I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, you may or may not had wheels or like carts or anything for some of these structures, like that they.
Well,
built.
Like let's be real here, though. Like you know, if you're rolling logs, it's just a long wheel. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you had it's technically, yeah, it's a wheel.
It's not mounted it's with something wheel. On top of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, so so Hancock and the boys, they always say like, Hancock and the boys, you know, they say that, well, there must have been a civilization that predated and on Malta, like before we've talked about Göbekli Tepe, they have unearthed that, but there was not a lot of evidence of humans on Malta until they found a couple of Neanderthal bones. So Neanderthals had died out tens of thousands of years before this. If you go with the records. So if you go with that, they're very well, Neanderthals obviously came down on a land bridge because at the glacial maximum, the sea level is like 280 feet or 300 feet lower, which actually connects to mainland Europe. So you could have walked across, that's all the animals would have got there. And as the ice caps melted and the island was cut off, you'd have a trapped civilization. So this kind of goes with that theory of someone built these. They were wiped out. They lost this ancient advanced civilization from some type of global apocalypse, common impact on the ice caps in this case. Wiped out, maybe some flooding, not a lot of remains of the people there. And then through, maybe they did jump on a boat. They found this island. They resettled it. They found these temples, repurposed, rebuilt, made their gods about them, settled around them, had parties in them. And then as history's passed, only documented evidence is of these people, so therefore they built it. It's kind of the theory. It's like there must have been someone else who could build these megaliths because this shouldn't be in the timeline of humanity shouldn't be here. Like it's just like where did these come from?
So you have all of these temples and these structures that are built above ground. Now there's an even I would say I. To me, it seems even more impressive when you move on to the temple complex or the kind of the underground temple complex of the Hypogeum of Halseflini.
It's a great name.
It is fully underground structure. This is very reminiscent of what we talked about those caves in Turkey, the underground caves there. It is a very elaborate complex of just these underground chambers that were built. Why were they built? Why were they built underground? Not really sure because it's
cenotes. That's what I think. Well, I think when I was reading this and stuff, I was like, I think some of this stuff was built because like it's not like Malta has a source of fresh water. They don't have a lake or anything. So like if this is limestone, it would kind of make sense to me that you would build these things to catch rainwater. Like you might build this stuff underground to collect as fucking much rainwater as possible. Cause like that to me is such an obstacle living there. That was one of the first things I looked at. I was like, is there a fucking lake here or anything? Like how are these motherfuckers drinking? Like just like surviving on rainwater? Like
that's have to a dig fucking, a well. I that's could a, dig a well.
Like that's to me, dig a well or like if there's a, you know, if this is like a lot of limestone area, like maybe there is kind of like a cenote kind of thing like in Mexico where there's just like, you know, these pocks of areas that collect enough rain water over the years and are cool enough that it doesn't evaporate. Because I'm like, it doesn't seem like a good area for suit for humans if all you're doing is living off rainwater. I mean, I guess people live in the desert and shit, but very difficult.
Yeah.
Poses a problem.
It would get hot lugging all those boulders around you.
You need water. Oh, yeah, big time.
Yeah, hydrate. So the Hypogeum itself is actually dated back to the Neolithic period, so probably between 3600 and 2500 BCE. And it's, you know, again, estimated to be at least 5,000 years old, and that the entire complex was carved out of the solid limestone using, you know, from what they can tell,
just
primitive, like primitive tools that would have been available to them, probably, you know, like antler picks and like stone hammers. Like, that's all you got.
So fucking long. Or an unbelievable amount of time.
Or it was already there. Resettled.
Well, to be honest, like when you give me the options of like, oh yeah, you just had like a generation of family that just like chipped away at this thing forever. Or it was there and these people claimed this area with these tools.
And it's not just that they chipped it away. It seems to be chipped in a way that it actually has acoustical properties.
Mm-hmm.
Like purposeful. Like they seemed like designed.
That is one of the more remarkable features of the Hypogeum, and that, you know, when people go there, I think it's still open.
I think it just reopened.
For people to go in. It's like, and you know, you go in there and they will tell you that certain chambers exhibit very unique resonance. They produce almost a reverberating effect, or they even amplify the sound within some of these chambers. And that most, the archaeologists and the people who study the Hypogeum say that a lot of this is intentional. Like there's no way they didn't know what they were doing. Like this is something they wouldn't have been aware of, but they were purposely designed to do this,
it seems like each like chamber that they've tested, like, is almost like it's for this purpose. Like it's this frequency. If you were to chant this tone, it's going to amplify better in this room compared to that room. So it's like they had different uses for the rooms in this fucking thing.
Yeah, that's how they summoned the fucking Megazord, is they all would have to go in the room and fucking...
Gotta hit the perfect frequencies.
That's absolutely mind-boggling to me that they're like, you know what? Before these people start chipping away with their fucking antlers, they're like, listen, I know everything about sound.
Crazy idea.
Let's just chip away this limestone. And when we get down there... This is going to be crazy. What I'm going to build here. Just, I wish we had some better tools.
Like I'm pretty sure there's no like written, there's no hieroglyphs, nothing written in these caves or this, even on Malta itself. So like this, whatever culture was there.
Look at this.
They didn't write anything down.
Yeah. So the Hypogeum's discovery is like, it's kind of interesting. And the fact that it was kind of discovered by accident. Like when they found it, like, because Malta is such a small island and stuff like this, I guess it went through a type of when it was going through kind of its industrialization and urbanization, a lot of the areas on there expanding out, like they were stumbling on a lot of these archaeologically significant sites that they just kept finding. It's kind of like in Egypt now, where it's like you can't dig 10 feet without finding like a burial chamber chock full of mummies. Like that's it, you know?
It makes me wonder like how much stuff might have been over, like entrances to tunnels and stuff.
Oh, sure.
Accidentally like run over, demolished, because in World War II it was a very strategic island. It's like the point of like British naval fleet. And imagine when they're building barracks or they're building stuff for the dock or whatever, they're just like, fuck it. What's this? Oh shit. Boom. I don't know. Bury it, bulldoze it, pour some cement on it. It's over. It's like how much stuff is underneath.
Yeah, and it's a lot of its excavation, again, it was accidental. It was just kind of like before anybody even got in there to document it, it was just like pretty much like road workers and stuff that just kind of like ran into stuff and like, oh,
that's road workers' nightmare.
Halt!
Yep, you got to stop everything and then you're like, okay, well, I got to, you know, pick up this stuff and move it. And then, you know, somebody comes out there realizing that, wait, no, this stuff's really important. You guys are just chucking it into the back of a truck and hauling it off to the dump? Like, what the fuck? This stuff's 5,000 years old.
You literally have like a round table with all the boys and you're like, all right, boys, ethics time. Do we pretend we never saw it and just continue on, or we all want the next couple weeks off?
How big was the bone you found? Yeah. Pinky finger? Not bury it. Keep, gonna keep bury going. It.
No, what that skeleton have? Angel wings? Like, I think so. Like, I don't know. Maybe. Nah. Like,
bury it.
Check it in the back. You think this is important? Nah, it's whatever. That skeleton got webbed toes? Nah, check it in the back.
Horns?
So with it being kind of an accidental discovery, there's a lot of reports and stuff that have like, that were kind of published. And so there's things that are hard to verify, but sound fantastic when you kind of come out it. Cause there's reports like when it was originally discovered the first time, there were over 7,000 skeletons found piled inside the chambers.
Stocked.
So which they were kind of being like, oh, like these, maybe this is a burial chamber. And then there was some talk, on, you know, in the initial phases of the excavation, like I think in like early 1900s, like very beginning of the 20th century,
they found xenomorph skulls.
Well, yeah. Well, they said elongated skulls. So
potentially there xenomorph.
Potentially xenomorph. There is some debate as to whether when they were referring to these elongated skulls, they used the kind of phrasing as they had the long style skulls. And kind of back then, 1900s, you still had the kind of phrenology, you know, fad that was still kind of going around. The science that was based on measuring of the skull, like the size of the skull, basically being like, okay, that's what determines your... a whole bunch of stuff, you know, you could judge a person's like, you know, ethnicity and like their ancestry. And then they're like pretty much cognitive development all by the shape of their skull, which we all know is kind of not, none of that adds up anymore. But the terminology would have been something similar to that being like, oh, okay, this is a long type skull versus a short type skull. But anyways, elongated skulls were purported to have been part of this discovery, that these people had these long type of skulls. Some people are saying that some of them didn't have, they lacked the fossa meridian, is which the joint that runs along the top
plate,
of the skull.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure that's a Tragically Hip song.
The fossa meridian?
Is it?
The fossa meridian.
You know, you just sing a couple bars and then we'll get it.
Yeah, I don't think that's how it goes.
There's only like a handful of listeners from Canada that knows that.
But here's something really interesting, that when you had these skulls and these human remains, right? And so they were shipping off. So maybe a number of them did get mixed up and did get shipped off to the dump before everybody got there and said, hey, no, hold your horses before you dump all this stuff out. This is really important. But they did recover like a number of things, and, you know, somewhere between probably like 1,000 and 700. But over the years, it seems like the kind of the numbers or the estimates kind of have dwindled down gradually from like 700 to 500, then it was 200, then it was like 100, then it's apparently zero, because these things, these bones and these human remains went missing at some point. They all went missing. They're gone. Nobody knows where they went.
They're in the basement of the Smithsonian right now.
Yeah, I don't know.
Locked up with the giants and shit.
At the Vatican, yeah.
Or at the Vatican.
Yeah. So nobody really knows. Kind of one of the things is that some people kind of place the blame on the person who was part of the first recorded archaeological investigations, and the head was by the name of Sir Themistocles Zammit, who is a Maltese archaeologist and physician, and he started in the early 1900s to excavate the Hypogeum. But some people say that he wasn't that really great at like record keeping, so most of the research and notes and all
he's
of that,
like, I did it.
I was there. I think it's important to remember that archaeology back in like the early 1900s and like late 1800s was fucking crazy. Like, yeah, you could just do anything.
Anyone was an archaeologist.
If anybody wants to get into crazy, like go back into the you know, when they were putting dinosaur bones together, you know, look up the history of the Iguanodon. I think if everybody remembers that, and how they put you just take bones and you would just put them together and you'd be like, this is how I think they would fit. And it's completely wrong. Like, it's just like, you know, it's like they knew nothing. The people who were digging these things up knew nothing about anatomy. They didn't know any of these things, like keeping track.
The Brontosaurus. The
last thing on the mind.
Yeah. Well, I saw a video one time of someone, like, just a little off topic, where someone was like, you want to know how bad fucking these people who put together dinosaurs were and who like drew what they think these skeletons were? Look at this skeleton and look at this dinosaur. right? And then they showed this picture of a dinosaur and they showed the skeleton. You're like, oh yeah. And they're like, wrong. That dinosaur doesn't even exist. It's a goose. That's a goose's skeleton. And you're like, oh shit. Like, oh. All right. Yeah. Maybe they're way off.
You have to remember, like, even around this time, early 1900s, people were having fucking, like, they were having mummy parties. Like, you know, they would dig up mummies and they would take, like, you know, rich, posh, you know, Europeans would basically have whole parties and you'd have, like, a dead mummy, like a mummy unwrapping party. And, like, that's what they would have. They'd have actual mummies shipped from Egypt and they'd be like, yeah, here, we were going to put them on display and, you know, kind of, you know, fucking eat. You know, eat Victorian sushi off of them. I don't know. It's fucking just crazy.
Like eat in the nuts. Corner of the room. Where you're like, oh, what's under there? And you're like, oh, that's stinky.
Yeah, it's kind of gross. It's like, but yeah, that was a kind of normal occurrence. And so when you think of this stuff, it's like, yeah, tons of shit could have gone missing because nobody was keeping track of any of this shit.
Well, it also leads, you know, to the mystery a little bit of when they're like, hey, like, these skulls may have been elongated and stuff. And then it's like, hey, we don't know where any...
It's all gone.
It's like, well, how elongated were these skulls? Do you have any picture? Nothing. It was 1900s. Like, goddamn.
That would be something, though, if there was elongated skulls, because they had, you know, elongated skulls in Egypt not that long after. And they've been all around the world, like people trying to stretch their skulls to imitate something, right? Imitate or a sign of royalty. Like, let's just stretch our brain. And our whole skull.
Why?
Yeah. Let's just put boards on our children's head and slowly tighten them until their head is like a point, like a pylon. That looks pretty cool.
Looks pretty cool.
Where do you get that from?
Like, you get that from something else.
Dude, of all the crazy shit humans have we've done crazy shit over the years. Cranium stretching
and all that shit. Yeah.
Fucking
insane. I think neck elongation is pretty weird too.
But like, even that too. Why? Why are you fucking trying to make your neck long? Like what is that? Cool. Like when you
at least
when
your head, at least the brain of your body is still in the right cavity. At least your neck is longer, but your head is the same shape. When you put your head through the boards and it fucking like stretches back like a pylon. Why did we do this to ourselves?
Some king had some really high forehead and everybody's like, that's cool. Like I wanted my head to look like that.
It was that was the same in Egypt, but they call him the alien king, Akhenaten or whatever.
Akhenaten.
In all the hieroglyphs, he has the fucking flat elongated head too.
Everybody thought that was pretty rad. And they were like, I want my head to look like that.
Now you see that kid in school and you just call him five head. That's what you call him. Yeah. Everyone had a kid in high school who had that huge fucking forehead. That guy's royalty 5,000 years ago. Your head's not tall enough for that. I'm talking a guy with a really tall forehead.
Yeah. One of them box head motherfuckers. Yeah.
Alien, you went to school with an alien hybrid.
Yeah, that kid was he's a king of humanity 5,000 years ago.
Yeah.
Now he's going to be called five head.
Yeah.
Poor kid. The rest of us would have been fucking... had our heads bound to look like that.
we talked about the unusual acoustic properties of the hypogeum, but there is some theories out there that it's perhaps like, you know, not only were these just used for like rituals purposes or singing or entertainment or stuff like that, that these could have, maybe these unique resonances and amplifications of sound were actually created using, like, how would you figure it out? Like how did they, you know, that's one of the questions you have to ask. Like, how did they figure out that all these sounds and frequencies interacted just in such a way that they would work? Cause it's not like you're just going to carve it out and being like, okay, if we put this chamber exactly here, this distance from another chamber, you know, we're going to know that it's going to sound. We need to dig this chamber right here to make it sound this.
We have to have this chamber perfectly this many, this wide by this long by this tall with the same this angle of wall, and it's going to make this frequency. They knew for some reason it's like healing properties, or like you go in this chamber when you're whatever some type of illness and it heals you faster, or they had a reason to make these chambers in a way that resonate like that. It's fucking wild. Yeah.
So some of the speculation will be that they were taught this, like they could have been taught this by this perhaps the, you know, was it our buddy Freddie Silva would call them the Shining Ones or the
Nephilim,
you know, the Nephilim,
the Atlanteans, post fucking the Atlanteans,
Lemurians, any type of you know, destroyed civilization, you know, perhaps some of their scholars or their you know, those who fled from the destruction of their homeland came here,
brought knowledge,
or were already here, or they were already there maybe, and taught the people who came, you know, that emigrated to the island of Malta, and then taught them these techniques
I sometimes think in my head when we were talking about these things that if there was like a Nephilim or something that were here that's not from here, they got stranded here.
Half demon, half angel. I love it.
Right? Whatever. They use these acoustics for like, we think we're like, oh yeah, they had these prop, like, oh, we go there like, oh, you can echo and stuff. But like us humans don't have the same, whatever their bodies or stuff, whatever vocal sounds they can make, they would maybe use this stuff. What we could never on the level that they do, right? But it's just left there. Like, so it's like, or they didn't, they just, because if this is actual information, it feels like this information would be so important that you would see this from Malta, then everywhere. You're like, oh yeah, we just got to make some fucking sound chambers and this and that. Like, this seems like really, really important information if this is the fact. So I always kind of think that maybe this is some sort of like, if it is the Nephilim, that it's either something they didn't want us to know or that we just can't even fathom what to do with it in our human bodies. Like, they are just human bodies are not going to make the noises needed to activate whatever acoustic properties are there to the full potential.
Well, we've heard that. I mean, you hear that all the time in like this field, like acoustic properties, frequencies, like higher geometry. We heard about it with Freddie Silva, like in the crop circle themselves would emanate a different frequency from the surrounding areas. You hear about it in like the great pyramids and like the King's Chamber, it vibrates at a certain frequency. So like the cultures of the time knew something about the frequency. Like, frequency has to have an effect on the human body in some way. Because if just all matter in general is vibrating frequency, right? Just atoms into molecules vibrating together to form this surface, depending how tight they are and how fast they vibrate. So if you you can see it when like an opera singer breaks a glass or whatever, or that principle of like a resonant frequency can affect matter. Like, so sound can affect matter. So if you can identify the frequency, let's say of cancer, let's say this has always been like a pseudoscience thing. They say like, oh, if you could identify the frequency of cancer and you could hit it with ultrasonic waves at that frequency, you could actually disrupt the cancer cell and kill it from the inside.
Or the Twin Towers.
Or you could dustify the Twin Towers with ultrasound from space. I'm saying that's just sound, like vibration it always interconnects these ancient sites, not just Malta, but like pretty much everywhere we talk about, like, oh, it's got a weird acoustic properties. I wonder why.
We're in these Nephilim death chambers where they used to bring 700 humans at a time and just vomit until they died. And we're in there like one frequency below, just fucking turning into bones. Ooh, ooh, we're all humming in there. Oh, listen to the echo. It's got an 8-second echo in here. Little do we know, one more second, we just evaporate into dust.
And if you probably brought up this point, I think our buddy Jason Martell would agree with us that, yeah, it's speaking on the idea that sound and vibration can affect matter. It's like, perhaps this is what had aided them in moving, some of the objects, like the large stones that would have been, you know, that would take immense effort to, you know, and ingenuity to have moved by themselves. But it's like, maybe that the sound actually affected those. Along with another piece of Malta's mysteries is there are these formations which are referred to as cart ruts.
Don't give it away, Dan. We got to take a short beer break and we're going to get to the cart ruts. Cart ruts right after. Get a couple beers and maybe a little doobie. We'll be right back.
Woo!
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes.
That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
We're back. We're talking about some
Cartwrights.
Is exactly what we're saying there, Dan? Is it ruts for carts?
Yeah. Well, they appear to be. Ruts for something. Like, that's the only way. That's the way that they appear to be. Like if you looked at them straight on, you'd be like, okay, these are you know a series of parallel grooves and or maybe tracks that are carved into limestone bedrock found all across various locations in Malta. Like and these ruts will run in straight or just slightly curving lines that extend for long distances.
But it's basically sometimes like several ancient kilometers. Train tracks. You're just like once you get the grooving, you just fucking plunk it in. You just pull.
Well, it seems when at first look you're like, oh, that could be natural, and then nope, they're like perfect. Perfectly spaced, yeah, perfectly spaced, and they just follow each other. Yeah, across the land. It's wild.
Most scientists date these to sometime around the Bronze Age, probably around 2000 or 2500 BCE, and that. These things may have been in existence for thousands of years. That they've been there, just kind of hanging out there, and apparently they can be found in like several locations across the Maltese Islands. But they are mostly found on these limestone plateaus and hillsides. Now, they're not all exactly the same. Like some of them vary in width, and they're saying that probably that they are probably around 60 to 90 centimeters apart from each other. But that's the depth can also vary, and that some are pretty shallow, but others can reach like several meters deep into the limestone bedrock. Now
it's like trolley tracks,
and they don't know what they're for. Like they're not really sure.
Well, I guess they didn't have wheels though, right?
They wouldn't. Well, at the time.
Like Bronze Age, they might have had wheels
5,000 years ago. But we've 4,000. I thought we just said
3,000.
I thought we just said they likely didn't have wheels. Maybe they're just pulling sleds.
That was like 5,000 years ago. But yeah, sleds or sledge.
Fourth millennia BC, modern day Iraq was when the first wheel discovered.
See, I wonder if it was something like, and this is just me. I know nothing about history. Absolutely nothing. But really? Due to the fact that you said that we don't know, you've opened a door for me to just take wild guesses.
Yes.
Yep. I wonder if it's something like, this is going to get wild. But, there is evidence of like, animals and stuff on the islands. So what if they carved it? The first things they do is they carve these. They didn't know the wheel. They're like, this is so foreign to have a wheel.
Okay. Yep.
So it's like a bobsled track, right? And they just lube up these fucking tracks, right? They just lube up these tracks and then pull carts, right?
Sure.
With basically like blades on them.
Yeah. I mean, sure.
And just slowly cutting.
It could have been that. But like we were saying before, perhaps, if you want to go wild speculation, you're saying like, hey, maybe these are just actually, maybe they have some type of sledge that they put on there and that they somehow propelled this thing with these acoustic technologies that they had talked about. Because we talked to our buddy, like I said, Jason Martell would be like, sonic technologies to like move stuff along these. And like, you want to keep them going in one direction or whatever. Like you would just kind of like, you'd use your sonic technologies to levitate these objects, and then you just kind of push it. You just push it along these tracks.
Oh, shit.
Like,
that's a way better idea.
Well, yeah. It's, I guess,
fucking magnets.
Less messy than having to lube it up with whatever, I guess, animal fat, like, or some kind of like.
Well, yeah.
Where would you get? They don't have the wheel, but they have industrial amounts of lube. Like, where are they getting this?
From the future, baby.
Right. Okay. Oh yeah, it's the sex jelly from the Villaboas encounter. Like it serves a dual purpose: not only weird arousal jelly that when you get abducted by aliens, but it is also also a it's a good way to move your, no, lot, see, your 50 that, ton limestone stones around.
No, that does make more sense to me that it'd be some sort of like track for like anti-gravity, because if we're leaning towards like there's some sort of ancient technology that we don't know about and an ancient civilization that was possibly behind these things, I'm gonna go ahead and say that they'd be like, if they're doing all this other stuff, they'd be like, yo, use a wheel, idiot. Like, let me show you. Fucking round, see this ball rolling, put it on the fucking carts.
It's crazy, because what if this hypothetical, there was some advanced civilization and they had these tracks were the foundation, and in the tracks was some type of metal for some type of anti-gravitic sled, let's say, because most natural metals, until you make them like type of alloy, rust, like any type of iron derivative is going to rust when it gets to the surface. Right. So like iron in the ground will stay there forever, but as soon as it hits air, you throw something in the landfill after a few hundred years, it's going to disintegrate, turn to dust, red dust. And eventually, if there's a big flood, wash away or whatever. So say there was something in there that we're talking 10,000 years plus. Oxidizes, washes away, turns to dust, goes into the soil, flood comes, washes it away. Now we come back and we go, oh, there's these fucking grooves here. No evidence of any metals though, because it's been washed away. Now, what are these grooves for? I don't know. Maybe use them some type of sled, I guess.
Because 90 centimeters does not seem that far.
That's
to
1 meter.
Have any, yeah, to have any like to, that's not a big cart.
1 meter, yeah, 1 meter cart. And the crazy thing is, In the documentary, I think it's episode 3 on ancient mysteries or ancient apocalypse, some of these tracks actually descend into the water. So they've been there. So sea level's been rising it's been rising for 10,000 years pretty much.
Yeah. And then some of them like go off like cliffs. They just like sheer cliff. They're just
they end in random spots. So some of them go into the water. So if there was a civilization here, let's say, during the last ice age, because this is far enough, we're well out of the ice caps. This would have been probably a nice four season place. What the fuck was I just saying? I just lost
four
it.
Seasons.
It's end of the last ice age.
Last ice age.
Cart ruts are going into the water.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Cart ruts in the water. Okay.
There you go.
So there was a civilization here 10,000 years ago. If we could follow those ruts, how far do they go down? So if they go down, like say, imagine they go another 100 meters, that puts that like occupied land at 10,000 plus years ago, just like that. Just because we just don't know, because we haven't found fossils. We found those couple teeth. So now you're 10,000 years. And then, I mean, how far do we go back? Because if there's Neanderthal, so they've been, how long? Like, they've been gone for tens of thousands of years. And it's widely accepted that we coexisted. We fucking fucked around with them. Some of us got Neanderthal DNA. We coexisted at the same time, probably for tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of years. We had us and those guys, kind of the same. They were a little stockier, stronger, and we might've been a little smarter and more dexterous. And we
My name is Brayden, and this is my Neanderthal wife.
She just she can carry you everywhere. She's really strong. No, but they actually thought, now they think
she's given me 16 children.
Four at a time. They come walking out fully grown.
Litters.
Fully developed. They have muscles. They come walking out, they carry a club. Easy.
My pelvis has been ground to a fine dust. I can no longer walk.
I've got like a cane. I like walk with one of those like hip dysplasia
multiple
walks.
Fractured. I have multiple fractures in my pelvis. Worth it.
Get yourself
So yeah, it's another one of the theories is that that's kind of out there, is that perhaps that these tracks were like maybe not just used for transportation of some type, or you know, perhaps anti-gravity sleds or something like that, but perhaps they were kind of the infrastructure for the formation of an ancient power grid. Mm. That there's you, if you ask some people, like some of these might be line up with, you know, the geomantic lines or ley lines or anything that run across that island, that these cart ruts were built or, you know, formed in such a way to take advantage of those, you know, terrestrial energies, you know, those latent terrestrial energies that perhaps you could amplify them, you know, either with.
Does the cart tracks lead to the temples? That's something I didn't really come across. It didn't. In that case, say those like Gigantea was, it's like the power center, and then has all these tracks, and in those tracks are laid some type of material. But over the years, it's been taken. Like, say it was just like another type of stone that was set in that track, and that was a conductive material. And then another culture comes along, and they go, "Well, that looks pretty sweet," and they scoop them all up because they use them from something else. But so the power grid. I guess, what are you powering though at that point? Like, what are we talking
about? Well, like I said,
it like could, low it voltage, could like Afghan.
A number of things, I suppose.
What did Martel show
us? Baghdad battery.
Well, that would, yeah. That would make sense too, Zell, in your same reasoning that these cart paths, so we're thinking something travel on it, but yeah, it's maybe it was some sort of inlay conductive metal, and that's just how they ran their power.
Like metal they had, or rock they, or something.
Yeah, or something that's now long gone, and maybe moreover so than see. My brain keeps going towards that something fucking crashed here. Something crashed, and they just pulled their ship apart, and whatever they had, and to they're like, well, we're stuck, right? And we've got to build these echo chambers. We're going to try to get a message back, but like, this is it. We've got to build. We got to coexist here as long as we can. And so like Malta is them building a society, you know, and this would be a perfect spot because like, think if you were building this, you're like, listen, we want to steer clear of these fucking apes that are these hairless apes that are running around. They're fucking savages. They're absolutely wild. They're going to kill us. They've got crazy animals. You know what? Well, let's go here. Let's build our little civilization here. We'll try to contact home and live as long as we can. And they make it one generation of whatever they were and then die off. And then slowly we find it. They start pulling it apart.
So what were the tracks and landing strips?
Well, maybe it's just that they like power, like they had a ship power source or something that's long gone that, and they just slowly pulled everything apart and they had like, yeah, like this was power, some sort of technology that we can't even fathom, based on naturally occurring elements on Earth. They had just a more symbiotic relationship with the natural elements than we do maybe, or they just had a better understanding of how to more efficiently utilize the elements on Earth than we currently do.
So if they came in a ship, do you think then if we went, did a nice, spent some time diving around that area, is there an alien ship at the bottom of the ocean washed off the shore?
Well, no, I would say it'd be eroded and gone.
Eroded?
Well, who knows what it's like? Who knows what it's built of, right? Like,
oh, it's got to be
salt.
If you're an alien ship, you're some type of like pure 100% efficient superconductive alloy that is
but maybe they're pulling it apart, maybe they're a biological ship, that's a good point but I just don't know. That's kind of why I think like I can kind of like grasp onto that and be like, okay, well that's why it's in the middle of the ocean, because you don't want to fucking run-ins with anyone else. Like you can be self-sufficient there, like you're fine. Right? Because of like everything else, I'm like, why isn't there fucking temples around the Mediterranean there at that age range?
Yeah. And if we're talking about visitors from the stars, you know, celestial beings and whatnot, we'd have to touch on the what is known as the Tarxian temples and their specific alignment that is pretty neato. So the Tarxian temples actually consist of four structures that are built out of these enormous, as they are megalithic, built out of enormous stone blocks, surprise. And they are the largest known prehistoric site in Malta. Like these are the largest ones. You know, the majority of scientists have dated these structures to between 3600 and 2500 BC. And then with there was a phase where they kind of fell out of use and then they came back into between 2400 and 1500 BC, apparently. And now the temples were seemingly abandoned at one point from what we can understand. And then they were rediscovered along with the, you know, like I said, the industrialization, urbanization of Malta. A lot of these structures were rediscovered and popped up. And this is also one of them. So when they found these temples, the first thing that they found was they initially had found a number of animal bones and tools, including at least one flint knife, and then the number of altars and reliefs that depicted domestic type animals. So from this evidence, it was kind of, they drew the conclusion that perhaps that these temples were actually places of like animal sacrifice, that this is where they brought their animals to be sacrificed. You have these depictions of them, and you know, for whatever reason, you know, good crop yield, good luck, whatever, you know, bless the new year, whatever you're going to do. But there's also an interesting thing. Now, there is a...
Oh, that's what the channels refer to. The blood. Yeah, the eye,
everything ran on blood. Everything ran on blood. Here's something interesting that is like all across, not just here, but all across Malta, even in the, I think they mentioned it also in the Hypogeum, there is evidence of this spiral motif, tons of structures within Malta are all decorated with this type of like spiral designs or stuff that looks like eyes or things like this, but they have just all across the on the megaliths or somewhere inside these structures are just like evidence of Jesus. He's painted on like spirals, like constant, just symbols of you know, they don't know what they mean, but they're obviously significant because they drew tons of them like everywhere and a bunch of these structures. And it's just like all of these symbols and all of these, like the ancient, you know, one of the most ancient symbols is just the spiral. And then why they put it there is still a mystery about why they put these things there, but they're all there. And like the spiral is present in ancient cultures, like all across the world, like that symbol for something. And usually it means, you know, it's been interpreted to mean something perhaps along the lines of like infinity or, you know, kind of like reaching out, like the doorway into the immaterial or something like that, a gateway of some sorts is usually what these portal things are interpreted to be. So yeah, and it's like, so all of these structures that, you know, perhaps served a ritual or or some sort of ceremonial thing are all like, you know, have these spiral motifs. Like perhaps this is what they thought of as like their portal, their gateway into whatever they were looking into. But you know, here in the Tarxian temple, they definitely have that. Now, one of the most interesting things is that the Tarxian temples have a very specific alignment, or at least when they found them, they, you know, as they were studying them, they realized that the Tarxian temples, they have an alignment which occurs during the spring and autumn equinoxes, and that it is these two points in the year, you know, when day and night are equal in length, that the alignment is observed on the morning of those equinoxes. And then during those equinox alignments, like sunlight enters through specific openings in the temple structures and then illuminates particular areas that seemingly designed that way within the complex. And then it creates this like temporary lighting effect that highlights specific architectural features within these buildings.
That's fucking cool.
It's so fucking wild. So they're pointing out something at a certain time. We just don't understand why.
It's like Raiders of the Ark bullshit. You know? It's like fucking you put your staff in there and you're just like, lighting up all this really cool stuff. Dude, but
that's what Hancock says about another reason he thinks that the date of these temples are so much older, because like on the equinox in the spring, like you can see the precession of the planet. If you can rewind in time and you point the opening of this temple, there's 19 temples and they're all slightly aligned differently, but all kind of looking the same way. So he says that the rising star at that time was Sirius. And if you date that back, that puts the temple way older than you think it is, because if some of the temples look right now not aligned to Sirius. They're like off some degrees. But if you were to go back through the procession, he says that these temples built at different times are all pointing slightly different ways and therefore signaling their time and Earth's history of when they were built, because these people had a knowledge of astronomy. And they'd be like, if we build the temple like this, on this day, the sun will rise. This rising star will come through the gate of this temple only on this one day every year and for so many years. And then it will change slightly. And then like, well, we have to adjust the next temple to show it that it's going to rise here. And then they keep doing it over all these temples. And if you look it up, I mean, I don't have credentials to fact check, but as he says it, through these temples, they're built different times. They're all pointing slightly different ways. And it's signaling where it was in the procession. And then you can date that back based on that type of astronomy. That's what they're saying.
I'm picturing them like building one temple. And then it's like 100 years later. It's
fuck!
God damn it. Like, why can't everything just stay in one spot? We got to build another one. To anti-gravity sled. Move it that way.
Yeah. Well, or it's one of those things where they were like, you know, they're like, okay, well, we're just logging how long we've been here. Like, we will build this one, and we're just not collecting all the information from these temples. But for me, I mean, it's weird that mainstream archaeology won't think that way as well, because if you're talking about some of the they're going to be so precise acoustic to get these acoustic properties. And then, like, mainstream, like, historians and stuff are going to be like, yeah, but they were off a little bit on the stars. Be like, well, if you rewind to, like, if we date it back, it actually did fit a star. It fit this. But then we would just have to adjust the dates. They're like, no, we won't. They were off. They were off on the star thing. I was like, it doesn't make sense to me. I'm like, it would make more sense that at one point this was perfect.
Even if you're trying to poo-poo on it, it's just cool that these people knew about the astronomy and they could predict eclipses and they could predict all this stuff. If you just go a straight history, you're like, these people somehow through the years of, because there's nothing written, through the years of just verbal histories, be like, on this night, this star shall appear here. And then the next generation is like, well, he said it would there. He said it'd be there, so I'm going to check it out. Oh, sure. Fuck, there it is. Boom. And it's like... So
fucking idiot, it's a little off.
It's a little off. Yeah, change it up. It's just crazy that if you just go with just straight... If say it was just a straight line, just the fact that we just kept staring at the stars because we had no light pollution, let's say. Yeah. And then you're... For most of the year, depending.
I mean, you wouldn't even really like. We think like they would, you know, they have like fire or candle or even that stuff. But even that is rare. Like you wouldn't use candles because even candles were hard to make. Like, and they probably didn't have candles.
Well, you'd have fire, but it'd be very central to
your location. But you also wouldn't. You'd only use fire for cooking and stuff. Like you wouldn't even really use it to like for.
No,
like,
I'm sure you got guys fucking all night playing with fire sticks out in the woods.
I mean. I don't know.
Firebug's not new.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to be playing with fire with all your wooden structures like sitting around.
These are stone structures though, Dan. These are pure stone.
But they also have wood in there. Like and all of your belongings would be made of wood. It'd probably be like, I don't want to play with fire. But just saying that they're, you know, yeah, like the stars would be your main source of entertainment at night, you know, if you weren't like just going to sleep and, you know, being able to predict like where they were is like, that's a huge thing. And even if it's like, okay, it's like, you know, they're tracking just the one star, the sun, and like, it just like makes a sweet light show during these 2 days. It's pretty fucking rad. Like, you know, just like, imagine the party, you'd just be like, you'd count down like, and then it hits like, you know, it hits the little thing and, you know, everybody starts humming their anti-gravity chants and everybody starts floating in the air and partying and that'd just be pretty rad. That'd be pretty
rad. It just seems a little crazy. Like that we now know that this like astronomy, they knew something about it, but the fact that we don't say like, because I guess the fact that we say, okay, this is lining up. If we can rewind the sky and be like, yes, this was pointing this way at this time. That temple is actually pointing that way. Maybe it was built earlier. Like, because we date stuff with organic, right? Carbon. Yeah, so usually, if there's something buried at the site, you dig it up, you're like, oh, that was buried at the site. Oh, boom, that's 6,000 years ago. But like, I always wonder on these, especially at like sites like Malta, like you can't, it's harder to get there. How much have you really dug? Have you really found out? Have you done all the go underwater and like look for more ruins? Like if it had been there, say for 10,000 plus years and it's 200 feet below, maybe your biggest ruins are 200 feet. Like, have we done that type of well, we call it LIDAR on the jungle. Is like, what do you have? I guess some type of a sonar for the sea, like to try and bounce off the, to see if there's any structures.
We kind of do have that. We do have, I don't know if any wide scale surveys. Have
just, been I just also, imagine like that kind of, those type of like scientific expeditions probably cost a lot. So you, and you're not going to get, there's no money out of it. Like you have to be funded in order to find this reason. Like you can't, you're not selling product.
It's a shot in the dark, right? You're like, I have no idea if we'll find anything. They're like, well, I'm not paying for it then.
I need $20 million to go check for something that I hope is there. What if it's not there? Like, I don't know.
We'll make 5 seasons for History Channel TV show out of it.
Yeah, well, we got to recoup the losses on this somehow. We spent $10 million on it. Channel. The submerged civilizations, that always fascinates me, because if there was something, just if there's a big drop off and there was like a little plateau that's been, you know, 10,000 years ago was right on sea level and now it's 200 feet below. And 200 feet's like, you don't just get there. You don't, like, from the surface, it's pretty far. And the sea is thousands of feet deep. Like there's lots of geological like scenarios where a huge landslide, all of a sudden from 200 feet, now you're 1,000 feet under. Like how much stuff has like crumbled under the sea? How much is, and then all the sediment over thousands of years?
Yeah, how much is lost?
Covered. Like how much is lost under, like say just, we've been here for hundreds of thousands of years with the same brain capacity.
And any civilization, you would like, it would make the most sense to be by the water, because you would get
a river's so mouth, like, or
fishing,
something.
Yeah, like fishing, fresh water. And then it's like, that's the first to go in an event like that.
Like if we just, what's the stat? If we raise the sea levels like 50 feet right now, like 70% of Earth's population is underwater. Like if you woke up,
let's go.
Because all the main ports are on the sea. All the world's biggest rivers that end at the sea, like that, like the all these places that waterways are the easiest travel. That's where most of the people are. Especially most of the big metropolises. That usually house the biggest companies with all the engineers and scientists that go with it. If that does all of a sudden, like, you know, just kind of goes underwater. Well, I mean, now we could escape pretty quick. But like, let's say there was some type of cataclysm. Flood, flash, you know, huge tidal flood from an asteroid impact gushing into the ocean. All of a sudden, 100 feet, 200 foot waves, it sweeps over your whole land in one night, one day, and it's gone. Toast. And thousands of years later, there's not a lot of evidence left of it. And people are like, that couldn't happen. There's no fucking way there was a big flood. It's impossible.
Well, it's weird to me. Like, it's just, like you said, with the carbon dating and stuff, where it's like, I wonder, were they fighting that? Were they so sure of that date? Based on just because of what they were finding in the area, and they're like, okay, well, this is now older than this.
That's just what they found. Yeah,
the pyramids and Stonehenge, and this is now really pushing the limits of our understanding of human history. So this is where we think it's going to be. This is where we're placing around 5,000. Like, I wonder if you go back now, like, had they found Göbekli Tepe first? And you're like, hey, Göbekli Tepe is 12,000. And then you go back and look at Malta, you're like, okay, well, maybe Malta is in fact older based on some of the evidence, right, of this, of their astrological...
That's been backfilled because we've destroyed it.
Yeah. So it's an interesting thing. I still think it just fucking boggles my mind that an ancient civilization with nothing around would just pop up here. Of all places, and just build superstructures.
It's crazy because I didn't really find
so many of them.
I didn't find there must have been massive quarries for those type of like 40 ton stones. Malta's like not a very documented on the internet. If you search Malta, you get like the tourist the tourist traps and a couple like scientific papers.
You can do a
lot
of biblical research about it.
Yeah, but there's no like, I don't know. It's kind of like obscure. Like you would never even, like Braden said, like, yes, I had to search it up on a map because like, Malta, where the fuck is that?
It's a fascinating island because like I said, it's just like, it's very dense and like archaeological stuff.
For such a small like, place.
We only covered like four things, but there's at least like, there's 10, like 15, like important structures.
There. 19 like temples and then, yeah, a bunch of other sites.
Yeah.
And tip there's to a tip, tons two of islands, ones. 40 kilometers. Like it's not big. It's not like a big area.
It's like the outskirts of like a metropolis city. Like say, it's like LA County. It's the size of LA County. It's just like just that. But now, I guess LA County has like fucking 30 million people. But
yeah, it is an interesting little island that is just kind of like there is a point like from what historians can tell, like the island was almost like kind of abandoned. Like it just like a lot of the population kind of left off or whatever. But there was just like some of these places were abandoned, like completely abandoned, like these huge megalithic structures that probably had some style at some time were huge, had huge cultural importance. And now they just lay there.
But it doesn't seem at the time like a suitable area to be able to like even keep a civilization going. Like if you had like, let's say even 5,000 years ago, like they're saying, you're fucking surrounded by the sea. You don't have your source of fresh water is rainfall. And now you're dependent on like food and stuff is like, you don't have a lot of space to work with in this. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me that this would be the spot. Like, to me, I'm like, it just doesn't make sense. Like, anywhere else along the Mediterranean, we should see signs of like a civilization around this age.
That's what I mean about the submerged civilization. Because if you were to go drop sea level 250 feet or more, whatever it is from last ice age, all the way from Italy and Sicily and Malta, it was all one country. So if there was something there, it's all hundreds of feet underwater, under sediment. It's there. It's probably, maybe we'll never, we're not gonna, probably not going to find, as we said, like this, it's expensive to go to.
And too, like, yeah.
Because all that, same in like Indonesia, all those islands of Indonesia, that was all just one archipelago, just all the way up to Southeast Asia, Indonesia, all the way, New Zealand, Australia. It was all a continent. Like you could walk that whole fucking thing. And then it's all slowly submerged over the last thousands of years. And probably a ton of great like civilizations, or at least their cities, had slowly been swallowed into the sea. Like they're sitting under there.
And just gone.
Like how much have we really explored with any type of like structure finding sonar underwater?
Like I know, like,
probably 0.1% of actual like surface area of the earth. We'll scan some stuff probably in the Bermuda Triangle, a few other like high traffic areas, let's say. Probably scan some stuff there. Like, oh yeah, there's a canyon there, there's this there, that there. We found the Bimini Road doing that probably. Well, I guess I think that was diving originally, but because we've talked about what's the one in Japan? The submerged structure?
Yonaguni.
Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, that's natural. They're like, well, it looks man-made kind of as well. So maybe there's just more, like that shit's probably all over. Anywhere there's some type of, you know, 100 or 200 foot submerged plateau, there probably was people living there at some time in Earth's history.
At some point, yeah.
If were they a super advanced ancient culture? Maybe not, but there was probably something there. And like, we've lost most of it. Sea levels are at their highest they've been in like 100,000 years or something. Like we had thousands of years of glacier where the sea level, we had no, like the land was sunk like that. And now we're slowly filling back up. And if all the ice caps and all the glaciers melt, we're going to lose like
20%
water world. Well, it's not. It's 20% more land mass lost.
We could hope it's water world.
It'd be more fun if it was water world.
Yeah.
Just floating fortresses. That's all that's left in the world.
Waterworld 2. Let's go. Come on.
Zell might have some oceanfront property.
Do it.
Bring that ocean in, man. Bring it over the mountains. Fill up the valley. If it comes over the mountains, my house is toast. So
it's
What am I? I think Kelowna is 300 meters above sea level. So it's got to come up 1,200 feet to take me
out. You're probably okay.
I might be all right.
It's definitely an interesting one if you haven't looked in it. And if you're into World War II stuff, and there's some incredible World War II stories about the Allies fighting the Axis and Nazi Germany over the
strategic point of Malta. Yeah.
Yeah. And some historic battles to keep it. So very interesting. Hashtag look it up. Let us know what you think. How does that make sense to you? Pop-up civilization, middle of the Mediterranean Sea, nothing around, predates everything we know, other than Göbekli Tepe. No big deal.
Not biggie. Giant megaliths, middle of nowhere.
Fucking weird-ass.
Underground opera halls, like, or what?
Weird-ass super weird shit, man. That we don't know what, they just lead off into the sky.
Yeah, it's been a while since we did a old megalithic civilization.
Yeah, it's been a while since Zell's been megalithically hard.
Rock hard, baby. This one got me. I'm full tilt here. That was fun. That's a really cool place, man. If I had all the money in the world, I would go to all, like, if I had like just unlimited money, I would go to all the sites. Malta. I'd buy Malta. Perform LIDAR around the entire coastline, deep into the ocean. I would find everything.
Yeah, well, it's just,
I would love to go all the big sites, man, like Egypt and Malta and Pumapunka. Yeah. And I'm never going to Machu Picchu now. I hate that place.
I'm done.
I hate everything to do with cursed. The Peru government travel board and everything. I hate it. I just now have to change my focus from Machu Picchu, unfortunately, to the rest of the world's open, though. Other than that,
Malta's pretty cool. You go to
Malta. Malta be fucking dope. Hell yeah.
Yeah. Basically, Zell's against unions.
I'm against anti-government people who shut down the railway station and welded the track shut, closed down tourism to their country twice. And now I've lost my money and I can't go. So I'm sure it's a great place. It looks fucking awesome, but I'll never get there now. Anyways, we didn't talk about, but did we have a theory of the week or maybe a review to read?
Yes, we actually had quite a few reviews.
Had some reviews? That's the theory of the week. Will be
give me a sec. Theory of the week.
Just gonna pick a review off the fly here.
I could pick the one where it's critical of Andrew.
That one was. I did read that one in the email. It was pretty funny.
Oh boy!
It's only a 3-star, so we'll leave it. We'll leave that.
I thought it was even 2.
Oof. We gave 3 stars to the 3 of us, and -2 for
minus
Andrew.
-2 for Andrew. Oh, no. Everyone gets roasted once in a while.
Yeah, yeah. We've all been on the short end of the fucking block shit there. Stick. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Theory of the week. Easy way to get it. Go to Apple Podcasts, wherever you do podcasts, and give us a nice review.
Our professional podcast.
This one is from T Ross 1 from the good old US of A. 5-star. A must go to. Started listening to these guys in the spring of 2018 with the episode on Flat Earth. I've been hooked ever since. They have entertained my mind while traveling the globe, driving thousands of miles, and residing in hotels. Always excited to hear what they discuss next. Crazy to listen to conspiracies while pondering cause and effect. My favorite episode was way back with the pyramids.
Way back. It's like number 3.
You
know what's
funny? If you like that episode, you might like this episode, T. Ross. So, hey, thanks for leaving that review. Help the show. Go leave us a review or support us on Patreon or Supercast. Go to alientheorist.com, the support tab, or go buy yourself a fucking shirt from our merch store. We got dope ass
sweet merch.
And here's the thing. If you look and you're like, the shipping. Listen, you go to our Patreon, support us $50 a month for 1 month. You get everything we've ever done. And I send you a shirt. All right. So you don't have to worry about the shipping or whatever if it's going to be over.
Included.
It's literally the best thing you can do. You get everything, you get a shirt, bada bing, bada boom. Also, by the time this comes out, some people messaged me and they said, hey, listen, is there a way I could pay more for a shirt to support you guys? I said, no. And then I went, You know what? Sure. I'll make one shirt just for the two people that messaged me. So if you go, there is a support shirt, but then you're going to be paying the shipping. But hey, two people asked me to do it. So I said, sure. There's one expensive shirt on our store, that directly supports the show. All the profits go to the show. So if you want to, you're more inclined to support that way, hey, all the power to you. But we got some beauties that are supporting us on Supercast and Patreon. Who are they, Zell?
Bunch of legends. This week's new supporters getting early access to all the case files ad-free, all the bonus stuff we have. Paul Barnard. A top-tier pledge by Brian Hubbard.
Woo!
He's getting himself a goddamn t-shirt.
Oh, buddy, you know what? I got to message him.
Jeremy Dunstan. Gage Olson. Olson, not Ocean. Jesus, I got fucking stoned, boys. Yash Chandel, and the only theorite of the year, Mr. Burmeister himself, is back with a four-year pledge.
And as we always say at the end of these things, keep those eyes on the skies.
See you in After Hours.